days and three nights. From inside the fish, Jonah prayed to the Lord his God. He said, "In my distress, I called to the Lord, and he answered me. From deep in the realm of the dead, I called for help, and you listened to my cry. You hurled me into the depths, into the very heart of the seas, and the currents swirled about me. All your waves and breakers swept over me. I said, 'I have been banished from your sight, yet I will look again towards your holy temple.' The engulfing waters threatened me, the deep surrounded me. Seaweed was wrapped around my head. To the roots of the mountains I sank down. The earth beneath bared me in forever. But you, Lord my God, brought my life up from the pit. When my life was ebbing away, I remembered you, Lord, and my prayer rose to you, to your holy temple. Those that cling to worthless idols turn away from God's love for them. But I, with shouts of grateful praise, will sacrifice to you. What I have vowed, I will make good. I will say, 'Salvation comes from the Lord.' And the Lord commanded the fish, and it vomited Jonah onto dry land." This is the word of the Lord.
Thanks, Sandra. Morning, everyone. So as Clive said, we are continuing in Jonah today. This is the second of our three-part series looking through the book of Jonah. To recap a little bit of last week, so the book of Jonah is a tiny book, just four chapters, right at the end of the Old Testament of the Bible, surrounded by lots of other small books. Those small books are books of prophecy. Jonah, in a way, is a sort of an anti-prophet. We discussed last week that I think this is not an historical account, but rather a parable or a fable, which helps us to know something true about God, very much like the book of Job or like Jesus's parables. So it speaks truths into our lives. It's a funny, interesting, kind of ridiculous book, which is absolutely amazing. So a recap of all four chapters then. This is even briefer than the recap last week. So God called Jonah. Jonah ran away. Jonah got a boat. God sent a storm. Jonah was held overboard. God sent a fish. Jonah spent 3 days and three nights in the fish, praying, shouting out to God, complaining, crying, praising. God got the fish to vomit Jonah up onto the beach. Jonah went to do the thing that God called him to do. Amazingly, the nasty people from the nasty city of Nineveh turned to God, which was amazing. Except Jonah didn't want them to. He thought God should have destroyed them anyway. And God then spends a bit of time explaining to Jonah why, of course, he's not going to destroy them, because he's a God of love, compassion, and forgiveness. That is the summation. Last week, we looked at chapter 1 and we thought about calling. We saw God calling Jonah and then Jonah running away from that call. And we left Jonah drowning. He'd been hurled overboard and he was in the sea, not knowing which way was up, drowning. And that's where we're going to be spending much of the time today. We're going to be thinking about what it feels like to be in the deeps, drowning. But right at the beginning of our passage today, we have a fascinating verse. The last verse of chapter 1 says, "And God provided a big fish to come and swallow Jonah." I'll be honest, I'm not convinced about the word "provided" there. Provided normally implies something nice, doesn't it? They provided a cooked breakfast, or they provided Wi-Fi access. Providing a big fish to come and swallow you doesn't sound particularly nice to me. I don't know if you've ever been swallowed by a big fish, but my guess is it's pretty grim. And that is how Jonah feels about it. But we'll come back to that word "provided" a bit later on. So, for most of chapter 2 then, what we have is Jonah inside this big fish feeling like he is drowning. He uses all sorts of extraordinary language to explain how he's feeling. And to help us to understand a bit of that, we need to understand a little bit of the imagery that would have been common to the original listeners or readers to this story 2,500 years ago. The first is the image of water. Now, the Jewish people were not a seafaring folk. In fact, they were petrified of large expanses of water. And so very often when we see water in the Bible, the symbolism of that water is about chaos, disorder, destruction, and death. So, for example, in the story of creation told in Genesis chapter 1, before God created the earth, there wasn't nothing. There was, in fact, water, because water symbolized chaos and disorder. In Genesis chapter 11, in the story of Noah's Ark, the water there, the flood, symbolizes death, destruction. So throughout the Bible, we have this imagery. So as we think about this chapter 2 of Jonah, I think as we visualize it, it's kind of like just a sea of blue, but dark blue, grim blue. You're drowning. Chaos, disorder, destruction, death. The second bit of imagery that we need to understand is from that last verse of chapter 1. So Jonah was in the big fish for 3 days and three nights. Now, as we read that, we might think, oh, of course, he was in the big fish then for 72 hours. But actually, that's not what the original readers or listeners to this story would have thought, because they would have known that 3 days and three nights was an idiom. So a bit like today, if I was to say to you, I'll be back in a minute, only the real pedants and pettifoggers amongst you would sit there and time 60 seconds on your watch. Because you would know that if I said I'll be back in a minute, what you know is that, I mean, I'll be back shortly. Well, when people heard the phrase 3 days and three nights, they knew that what it meant was that someone was going on a long journey. That was what the idiom meant, a long and hard journey. And in fact, even more than that, actually, there's some extra symbolism. You may be aware of ancient Greek and Roman myths and legends about people going down to the underworld, people like Orpheus. Well, there were other legends like that too. So in an ancient Sumerian legend written not a dissimilar time to when Jonah was written, a lady called Imana goes down to the underworld to rescue her sister. And how long is she down there? 3 days and three nights. You see, this 3 days and three nights idiom represents a long journey, perhaps a journey to the underworld, a journey into death, and then hopefully into rebirth. So, the picture that we have here of Jonah is that he is on a long, hard journey, characterized by chaos, disorder, destruction, and death. He says at the beginning of chapter 2, "In my distress, I called to the Lord." And he says, "From deep in the realm of the deep, I called for help." I wonder this morning whether you can relate to that, whether you feel somewhere on the scale of or between distress and deep in the realm of the dead. Now, it might be you're here this morning feeling all tickety-boo, you're on the mountaintop and all is glorious. Well, hallelujah, that's wonderful. And I hope you can get something useful out of the sermon. But actually, this sermon today is principally aimed at those of us who feel somewhere on that scale between distressed and deep in the realm of the dead. Do you feel like you're drowning, like you don't know which way's up? Maybe you're experiencing physical or mental or spiritual anguish. Maybe you feel as far from God as you've ever felt. The imagery of this story is, I don't know how helpful it is to think of God being up in the heavens, but that's sort of the imagery. God up in the heavens, and where's Jonah? Right down at the very bottom on the ocean floor, literally as far from God as he can possibly be. So I wonder what's going on in your life. Maybe there are relationship difficulties. Maybe the pressures of work feel unbearable. Maybe you're grieving. Maybe you're worried for a loved one. Maybe you yourself are in awful pain, or you've had an awful diagnosis. Maybe you're losing faith. Maybe you've lost your faith. Maybe you're lonely, or you've been let down or hurt. Maybe in some way, shape, or form, you're experiencing something of that physical, mental, or spiritual anguish, or indeed, emptiness. That's exactly where Jonah was. Physically, I mean, he was inside the belly of a big fish. Mentally, we can see the turmoil as he cries out to God. Spiritually, he couldn't be further from him. Originally, as I'd been preparing this talk, I was now going to jump straight into some solutions, because that's the kind of chap I am. Thankfully, my wife is much more sensitive, and over the years, I've learnt some better ways. I think for a moment we need to dwell in the deep. We need to acknowledge that life can be hard, brutal. We need to acknowledge that there are times where we don't understand what it's all about. Where we can't believe that any kind of good God would create this kind of a world. Most of us will feel like that at some point in our lives. Many of us will feel like it quite often in our lives. And this is not a church where we're going to shy away from that fact. Life can be really tough. So where's the hope in this passage? Jonah here was at his wit's end, rock bottom, and he couldn't see or hear or feel God. Let me tell you a story about a young man called Ahanu. Ahanu was a Native American maybe a century or more ago, and he was just approaching his 13th birthday. And he was excited because on his 13th birthday, he would become a man. He just had to complete one more task of his childhood. That was to be taken out into the middle of the forest and left there on his own to stand for a whole night without moving to greet the dawn. And if he did that, he would be a man. So there he was, alone in the forest. And as the night drew in, his excitement turned first of all to boredom, then to anxiety, and then to downright fear. Every crack of a twig he thought was a bear coming to attack him. Each time the wind whistled through the trees, he was certain it was a pack of wolves coming for him. Even the silence pressed in heavy and dense. And after an eternity of waiting, 10 eternities, dawn finally began to creep through the forest. And Ahanu had the final shock of his long night. He began to discern a tall, solitary figure, standing not 10 yards from him, bow and arrow in hand. It was his father, who'd been with him all through the night. Jonah couldn't see or hear or feel God, but God was with him. And in fact, even more than that, God had already provided Jonah's rescue. It was just that Jonah couldn't see it. Even when we can't see or hear or feel God, he is with us. And he has already provided the means of our rescue. To understand that, we have to jump forward into the New Testament, to Matthew chapter 12, where we see the Pharisees having an argument with Jesus. And they say to him, "Come on then, if you're who people are saying you are, give us a sign." They wanted something glorious, mighty, majestic. But Jesus very quietly said to them, "You're not going to get the kind of sign that you want. In fact, the only sign that you're going to receive is the sign of Jonah. Just as Jonah was in the belly of the fish for 3 days and three nights, so the Son of Man will be in the earth for 3 days and three nights." As a quick aside there, by the way, if you're slightly confused about how dying on a Friday and rising on a Sunday can equate to 3 days and three nights, don't forget it's an idiom talking about a long journey through death and into new life. Jesus, in the sign of Jonah, by dying and rising again for us, has provided the means of our salvation, of our rescue. Just as Jonah, being in the big fish, was already in his salvation, so we are in ours. And that's wonderful news, but let's be honest, it doesn't feel like it at times, does it? When we're down at rock bottom, when we're down in the depth, when we're somewhere between distress and deep in the realm of the dead, it doesn't feel like that. But that doesn't mean it's not true. That is a hope for us to cling on to in the midst of our physical, mental, and spiritual anguish, emptiness. God is with us, and he has provided the means of our rescue. It can still be a long journey and a painful one, but we do have that hope to cling on to. And so I want to look just for the last couple of minutes about what Jonah does when he's down in those depths, when he's as far from God as he can possibly be. Mostly in the book of Jonah, we shouldn't look to him to see how we should do things. But in this passage, we should. So the first thing that Jonah does is that Jonah is real with God. He has a right old go at God. He shouts at him, "You hurled me into the depths." Now, as it happens, that isn't what happened. Jonah got the sailors to hurl him into the depths. But that was how he felt. That was his reality at that moment. And he has a real go at God. And right throughout the Bible, we see people shouting at God. And to the best of my knowledge, God isn't upset about it once. I think God would much prefer that we were angry at him than that we simply slipped away. So when we are in the deeps, let's be real with God. Secondly, Jonah was real with himself. As readers of the book, we can see all the way through that he's running away from God and that really he's only got himself to blame. But it's only here at rock bottom that Jonah begins to accept that for himself. He acknowledges that he's turned away and even that he's been clinging to worthless idols. Now, I don't know what's going on in your situation, and it might well be that actually you don't bear any responsibility for the situation you're in, or indeed for the way that you're coping or dealing with that situation. But for some of us, it may be that we need to be real with ourselves, to acknowledge our part in it, either in what we've said or done to other people, what we've said or done to God, or what we've thought. Maybe we've been clinging to worthless idols of money, sex, power, pride, fear, whatever it might be. So we need to be real with God. We also need to be real with ourselves. Thirdly, Jonah uses the scriptures to help him to pray. A brief aside here. When I was at university, I had an acquaintance called Rob. And Rob was a notorious slacker. And frankly, if I thought he was a slacker, he must have been pretty atrocious. He would never hand his essays in on time, sometimes wouldn't hand them in at all, and towards the end of our first year, he was due to hand in an essay, but, as always, the day before, he hadn't made a start. So he went to the library, to the essay bank. You can tell how old I am, because it's pre-digitization. And the point of the essay bank was that you could find essays that had been written by previous students of your course over the previous several years, and you could look at them and be inspired by them. There were different kind of grades and levels there. The point, of course, was not that you go find an essay and copy it out for word and hand it in as your own piece of work. But that's exactly what Rob, in desperation, decided to do. He knew that if he handed in something that had been graded a first, his teacher would get sus. So he found one that was a 2-1 and spent the night copying it out and handed it in. 2 weeks later, he got it back, and his tutor had said this: grade first. Comments: I wrote this essay and I always thought it deserved more than it got. Rob had unbelievably managed to hand in the essay that his own tutor had written several years earlier on when they were taking the course. Rob was, sadly but rightly, kicked out for plagiarism. Plagiarism is bad. But did you know that Jonah is a filthy little plagiarist? The whole of Jonah chapter 2, all of these prayers that Jonah prays, they're nicked or pilfered from somewhere else in the Bible. Every single bit of it. In fact, in that verse we spoke about earlier, in my distress I called on the Lord, in that one verse, he's nicked from 7 different psalms. What a plagiarist! The good news is that when it comes to the Bible, God doesn't mind a bit of plagiarism. In fact, he positively encourages it. And so I want to say to you today, if you're at rock bottom, if you're down in the deeps, find the strength to have a read through some of the Psalms. The Psalms is a big book in the middle of the Bible, lots of little bits of poetry in there, full of people being real with God and real with themselves. Jonah used the scriptures to help him pray. It might be that you can't pray, you don't feel that you've got the words. Well, that's fine. Be a plagiarist. Find something in the Psalms. And then fourthly, Jonah praises God. Now, this, I think, is pretty extraordinary, because Jonah is at rock bottom, as far from God as he can possibly be. He can't see or hear or feel God. He says, God, you've banished me from your sight. Somehow at that moment, he finds the strength to praise God. See that in verse 8. When we're at rock bottom, down in the deeps, it's the hardest place to choose to praise. But it might be the most important place to choose to do so. So, if you're down in the deeps, physical, spiritual, mental anguish or emptiness, can you find it in yourself to be real with God, to be real with yourself, to use the scriptures to help you pray, and to turn to praise? I think if we will do that, we will find that God is with us, that he has been with us all along. And even though things are hard, there is hope. Because at some point, in this life or the next, we are, and I acknowledge that trying to be encouraging at the end of the passage, this might not be the most beautiful image, but we're going to be vomited up on a beach. That's our hope. And do you know something interesting? When Jonah is vomited up on the beach, the word that's used is dry land. And it's exactly the same word that is used in Genesis chapter 1 as God brings order out of chaos. And throughout the Bible, we see God's plan of redemption. In Genesis chapter 1, he takes us from chaos into order. In Genesis chapter 11, in the story of Noah's Ark, he takes destruction and turns it into hope. In the book of Exodus, as the people escape through the waters of the Red Sea, he takes them from slavery to freedom. In the baptism of Jesus, in the Gospel of Luke, we see him going from death into life. And all those things are offered to us too. It doesn't mean that life's going to be easy. Sometimes it's miserably, horribly, gruelingly hard. But let's nurture and support one another. And let's seek to find the strength in ourselves to turn to the God who has already provided our rescue and our salvation. And let's look to the day when we too can be chucked up on the sand. Amen.